Hi, welcome to the podcast. I am Joe Posnanski, and with me is Michael Shore. Michael, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Joe.
You're welcome. You're welcome. How are you? Are you well?
I'm fine. I mean, nobody wants to know who I am, how I am.
Of course, nobody wants to listen to this in general. Recently, I think
thanks to our holiday draft extravaganza featuring Linda Holmes, Brandon McCarthy, Mike DiCenzo, you, me. Who did I miss? Did I miss somebody? That was it, right?
Only the Yankee guy.
Zevenwald. I blocked him out. That's what happens. That's what happens when you talk about nothing but the Yankees for the two straight podcasts is I block you out. My fight or flight instinct kicks in and I just erase you from my memory. So Alan Zevenwald. So those six people, we did this big holiday extravaganza and somehow or another, and I don't quite understand how this is possible. I feel like anecdotally, the number of people who have told me or have contacted me to tell me that they have listened to this podcast, it has increased exponentially. Have you had the same experience?
Yeah, I have. I actually felt it kick in the week before when we had Brandon McCarthy on to do the We Are the World draft.
Interesting.
I tell these people, stop what you're doing.
We couldn't be more clear about what we want, which is for you to not listen for your own health and safety. It really... I don't know what else to say. We're trying to prevent you from having a bad experience.
But they won't listen to us. So, I mean, there's nothing we can do. But yes, I have noticed. I have noticed that. I've also noticed, and I should just make this point right here off the top. In last week's podcast, you might remember this. I don't know if you remember this or not. I sort of made fun of Kevin Can Wait, the television show. Yes. Kevin Can Wait. I didn't feel like I made fun of the show itself because I've never seen the show, but I basically said that because of the commercials that I really, really don't like that show because it's the one show that I've seen 1,000 commercials and I have no idea what the show's about.
Right.
So because of that, I don't like the show. Even that you can't say on the podcast because I heard from a delightful, a very, very fine man, from what I can tell from the email, a writer of the show, Avin Das. I wish I knew how to pronounce it. Avin, A-V-I-N, who sent me just a super kind email. It was not in any way. He was super kind, invited me and my mother, who I mentioned on the show last week, is a watcher of Kevin Can Wait, a big fan of Kevin Can Wait, invited us to come and see them, invited like to send some Kevin Can Wait swag to my mom. Just couldn't have been kinder. And the only thing I can think is that if you listen to this show, you are either incredibly nice, because why else would you listen to the show? Or you realize we're idiots and you can't get offended by what we say because everything we say is stupid.
It's possible that it's both things, right? Right?
Yeah, I would agree. It's probable.
People are nice and also they realize that they shouldn't get offended at anything we say because why? Because what's the point of that? Because the source of the comment is such an unreliable narrator that it's not even worth it. I don't think you actually made fun of the show. If I remember correctly, it was more you were just saying, like, I've seen a million ads for this. I've never seen it.
That's right.
However, I would. It is like a nice thing to have happened. Like someone reaches out and instead of saying, like, how dare you, you're a Nazi, which is usually what happens on the Internet. how dare you is closely followed by you're a Nazi.
You're a Nazi.
Regardless, right? Of, by the way, which side is making the argument. It's just nice. It's a nice story that someone reached out to you in a kind, open-hearted way and said, I would love to, you know, make your acquaintance. What a nice P.S. from that last podcast.
I could not agree more. I it was very, very touching to me. I mean, and I must admit that I've heard from quite a few people who listen to this podcast and are offended by something we say. And they're almost always, I've not gotten really a nasty response. I mean, they're almost always there. They say we're idiots, right? They say you don't know how to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, or they say that I'm a moron who says literally too much or whatever, but they say it so kindly. They're like, love you guys. Really doing this. We're doing this to help you is why yeah. we're giving you this information. And you know what? That's I. What are you going to say? I mean, these are good people. These are good people who are listening to this show.
This, you know what? This is what I'm going to say. Let's dedicate this episode of the podcast to our listeners. Hey, listeners, this is for you.
I absolutely agree. All right. We got our draft coming up. It's just as stupid as always. But there are a couple of things I want to do. And the first thing I want to do is, first of all, is have a sort of last Cleveland Browns update.
Let's check in on the Cleveland Browns. How are they doing?
We said last week's was the last, but something right. happened today that I'd like to comment on, and I'd like to actually hear your thoughts on this. I went today, just before doing this. This is on Thursday, January whatever, 11th, and I went to get my hair cut. And me getting a haircut is as you would imagine, having met me and know me, it's like a 5-minute thing, right? I mean, it's just basically like, you know, there's not a lot of hair there. Just sort of fix whatever's up there, kind of thing. So I go to get my haircut pretty much anywhere. So there's a place around the corner from me. It's just a little Sports Clips. It's just a little, you know, they play sports on television, and then they cut your hair, and that's basically it. And very nice over there. And I went over there, and it was a new woman was cutting my hair, and she was incredibly nice, but she was also very, very talkative, which I don't particularly like when I'm getting my hair cut. I just want to I don't want any comments. So they're like, oh, well, what do you want me to do here? And just do whatever you feel, right? I mean, there's not a lot you can do really for me. So she was asking me lots and lots of questions, and she found out I was a sports writer, and she said, well, I don't really like sports, but I'm a little bit into football. I like a little bit of football. I'm like, oh, that's cool. She's like, yeah, I like the Panthers. And she said, but I probably can't name more than like Luke Kuechly and Cam Newton. Like, she knows like 5 people on the Panthers. Okay. So she just likes them, right? She just, you know, she's a total, she just likes watching the games on TV. She doesn't really pay much attention. She doesn't care about football. She doesn't care about the NFL. Just something fun to do on Sundays. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. And she said, are you a Panthers fan? And I said, you know, yeah. I mean, I they're fine. And she said, oh, but they're not your favorite team. And I said, no. And she said, well, who is your favorite team? And I said, well, I grew up in Cleveland. And she says, immediately, without any prompting, oh, the Browns, how did they not fire that coach? Like, that's literally the thing she said.
Wow.
Instantly, she knows nothing about football by her own description of herself.
A self-proclaimed non-football
exactly.
fan.
Exactly. Heard I was from Cleveland, didn't even allow me to say that, like, oh, I care about the Browns or don't. I just said, well, I'm from Cleveland. And she said, how could the Browns not fire their coach? So I think this is crossed over. I think the Cleveland Browns are not just the laughingstock of the NFL. I think they're the laughingstock of America. That's what I think at this point.
Yeah, that's a bummer, man. I mean, that is a bummer of a story. Because what you're saying is that, like, there are certain you know, cultural touchstones that sort of cross over from the genre whence they came into the sort of greater consciousness, right? Like, there's like, it's, you know, the certain like moments of success or failure that then become references of, right. of success or failure, right. through, not just in that realm, not just in the realm of sports or fashion or musicals or whatever, but are just like the, now it's like you just, that's what you say when you mean failure or success or happiness or sadness or embarrassment or whatever. And that story would indicate to me that the Browns are basically becoming that thing. I remember yeah. when I was a kid and yeah. I used to watch late night TV, you know, like, you know, the Tonight Show or Letterman or whatever,
right.
you could sort of tell what those things were by the jokes that, you know, Johnny Carson, if you go way back,
right.
Johnny Carson or Letterman or Leno or Conan or any of those guys would make. if they referenced something in sports, you know, they're trying to reach the entire country. They're trying to have the national conversation. That was the actual, like, explicit goal of the Tonight Show when it first existed in you know, back in the 50s or whatever it was. The idea was that the Today Show is the first thing you tell people in the morning when they first wake up what they should be thinking about today. And then at night, you review the day's events with the country. So the mandate of the late night comedy world is really to be as wide, to cast as wide a net as you can cast. And so if you saw a reference to, like, the New York Jets failures or whatever it was, the Dallas Cowboys, you know, you knew, like, that thing has crossed over into the public consciousness in, like, a sort of meaningful way. And I feel like it's a similar kind of, whatever you want to call it, a litmus test here, to say that a non-sports fan, you know, hairstylist in Charlotte, Carolina, is, like, very attuned to the depth of the failure of your franchise. That means your franchise is bigger. Your failures are bigger than sports failures. Your failures are now cultural failures.
No, that's right. Well, because if she had said to me, like, oh, they didn't win a game this year, that wouldn't have been the same thing, right? Because that would have been, you know, like, yeah, okay, you probably heard about that. But immediately to go for them not firing the coach, like, immediately to go for that it's exactly right. It's funny. I was reading a story, I guess it was in the New York Times, about Tanya Harding. You know, there's the new, I don't know how new it is now, but the I, Tanya movie's out about Tanya Harding. And I'd kind of forgotten, I didn't forget that it was a big deal, but I'd kind of forgotten that for weeks and weeks and weeks on end, there would always be at least one joke of her, about her on every late night show.
Every single one. Yeah.
Right. For, like, weeks, not even for, like, a couple of days leading up to the Olympics or whatever, but for, like, several weeks, Tanya Harding was she was the essence of what was happening, like, in the culture, which is crazy. If you think about it, there are very, very few sports things that become that big, no matter how big we think they are inside of sports. They very, very rarely cross over into that world, right? And you probably felt that, honestly, when you were writing for Saturday Night Live, right? There was probably only, like, you had to achieve it, even as a huge sports fan yourself. Sports had to achieve an extraordinary level. A story had to reach an extraordinary level for you to be able to use it, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And you know, there's a difference also between, like, there were sometimes we would have a host who is a sports figure, and it wasn't always just the number one guy. Like, Jeter hosted, you know, at a time when, like, his fame was obviously sort of at its peak, but he hadn't done anything specifically that said, like, oh, right now is the time Jeter has to host. Nancy Kerrigan hosted after the Tanya Hardy thing. That was before my time. Yeah, she's like, but that's how big that was, as, like, a figure skater hosted the show, and she hadn't, because of what had happened, she hadn't been in the Olympics or whatever. It was just like that event made her, put her in the spotlight to the point where she could host the show. It's pretty rare, you know, like Michael Phelps hosted, and that was like that was a good example. Like, Michael Phelps's celebrity obviously transcended sports. He became
he became
the most famous athlete in the world for that year. You know, when you're on the cover of Sports Illustrated with whatever it was, eight gold medals. That's a moment where you're crossing over sort of into the wider culture. And it's very rare that anyone or any team crosses over for reasons of failure. That's why the Browns thing is remarkable, is because almost always when that happens, it's because of great success. It's not because of misery or incompetent.
It is amazing. It's a marvelous feat.
Great final Browns update, by the way. I guess this is sort of technically the first Browns update of 2018, right? It's not
2018,
really,
but we're gonna take a long break before we pick up the Browns updates.
Great.
Okay, here's the thing that is fun. Okay, so we're gonna do this draft in a few minutes, but I want to spring something on you. I kind of gave you a little bit of a warning. I even foreshadowed this a little bit in the emails that I sent you the last couple of days, or texts I sent you the last couple of days.
You only warned me that something was coming. I have no idea what this is at all.
No, I know. But when I tell you what it is, you'll realize that I did, for you specifically, foreshadow it a little bit.
Okay.
Here's the thing. I've got a very, and I don't know why this feeling came on recently, but you know, baseball season is approaching very quickly, which is exciting. And it's been kind of a weird offseason. There's been very, very little movement. After the whole Mike Stanton thing blew up, none of the really big free agents have signed. They're still all out there. Every team seems to be very timid about what they're doing. In fact, I think it's very bizarre. Have you heard anything about Lorenzo Cain? I mean, anything. Have you heard even a team connected to him or anything of that sort?
I haven't heard anything about Cain. I haven't been looking to her, but I haven't heard anything about Arrieta. Have you heard
it? That's crazy.
Do we know about Jake Arrieta is a pretty famous baseball player. Like, I know it's crazy. I mean, in the old days, and by that I mean like 10 years ago, everybody was signed before Christmas. Like, it was rare that there was Boris would hold somebody out until January. He'd hold out like, you know, Maglio Ordóñez or someone until January.
But
basically, everybody was wrapped up. I mean, the Red Sox met with Schilling over Thanksgiving and had him pretty much wrapped up in early December. Like, and now we're in the middle of January, and almost every big free agent is still just milling around out there. It's amazing.
It's crazy. And like I said, there are not even many rumors. I mean, you know, there have been a lot of rumors about Eric Hosmer. You know, the whole Red Sox JT Martinez thing has definitely, there's been some stories about that. But guys, Lorenzo Cain's a pretty great baseball player, and there's nothing.
Yeah.
Jake Arrieta's a, you know, Cy Young winner, nothing. Mike Moustakas. I mean, that guy hit 37 home runs last year? 38
home runs last year,
38 home runs, nothing. It's really strange. Anyway, that's not the point of this, but my point is, I'm getting excited about baseball, and it hit me today or yesterday or whenever I came up with this stupid idea. We need to create a podcast set of baseball cards.
This is
my idea.
Ooh.
It is the podcast baseball cards where we right all of the wrongs that have happened to baseball cards over the last 25 years, essentially.
In terms of design and
no, in terms of everything. In terms of, first of all, like my starting point on this, and then I want to hear some thoughts from you. My starting point on this is they have to be worthless. Like, that's why we call them
very cheap cardboard, low quality pictures.
Nobody's allowed to like collect them to sell them later. Like, if we catch you doing that, you're, I don't even know what we could do, but they're not for collecting. They're not for, you can keep them and have them and they're fun, but they will not increase value. That's a very important part of the podcast baseball card. They will never be worth anything ever. Like that's like the starting point.
Well, the way to do that, by the way, the way to do that to ensure that is they should come pre-bent, right? We should bend all the corners and like, pre-screw them up so that, and have like the sugar from a stick of gum should be stained.
Awesome.
So there's no chance. You can't put them. The worst crime that's been committed to baseball cards in my lifetime is when they started going into those like individual, like bolted down hard plastic things with like a gold band at the top that says PSA rated 9.2 or whatever. That to me is like, you've got to be kidding me.
Right.
So we want to preserve. We want to prevent that from happening. Then we just pre-bend them all, and then no one will ever think to do anything like that. So that's one thing we can do.
That is awesome. Pre-creasing the cards. We're going to pre-crease them and pre-bend them.
Yeah, we'll just bend two of the corners, and then it's not mint anymore, you jerks.
So that's the first thing. So that's the first thing that we do. Second thing we do, certainly, I mean, this goes without saying, we bring back the little comics, right? We bring back the little cartoons on the back of the card, right? I mean, those.
Of course.
I can't believe they ever stopped doing those. And not the ones that are, because, you know, through the years, the little comic, little one panel comic thing on the back of those cards, they went away from, they used to be very specific to the player. Then they were also incredibly racist and horrifying. I mean, they were horrible.
Yeah.
You know, you would have like every time they'd have Rocky Colavito, they have him like in an Indian headdress, like with smoke signals behind him. And, you know, oh, Rocky hit four Homer. You know, I mean, it was just very horrifying.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes. We wouldn't do that.
No, we don't want that. But we also don't want, later they started making those comics not relevant to the player. Like they made him like trivia questions, like who was the last guy to hit three home runs against the Tigers or something. And, you know, there'd be a picture of a tiger, you know, that no, they have to be specific to the player and they have to be fun and they have to not be racist. Like those are the three things. Do you have any other things?
Can we also have the other thing I want? And I don't know if you were going to get to this, but I want the single sentence, middlingly interesting historical fact about the player at the bottom of the card where it was usually something. It would say like, you know, it would be a Marty Barrett card, and it would say,
right,
Marty had three hits and the game-winning RBI in a 5-2 win over the Blue Jays on April 19th. Like, and it was just like, that was it. Like a completely mildly interesting one game memory of the previous season. Or, you know, it would say like, Bert Blylevin struck out 11 over 6 1/3 innings in a 5-3 win over the Brewers on September 13th. And you just were like, oh, well, that, how does that help me right now? Like it wasn't like putting the season into context. It was sometimes it would say, I remember one that was like, it said about Mike Green. It was like a 1987 or 88 Mike Greenwell. And it said like, Mike Greenwell led the league in game winning RBIs last year with, you know, 18 or whatever. And then, so I was like, okay.
Yeah, I'll take that. I'll take that one, right?
Like now you're saying like, okay, well, here's a snapshot of this particular player's season or whatever. But when it was just like a one game factoid, talk about worthless. It was the most worthless thing, even in an era when you couldn't look stuff like that up easily. It was still like, well, I don't care. What do I care? Why do I care Marty Barrett did on that May 3rd game against the Brewers? So the point is, we need to do that. Our cards have to have those things.
And we have to take it even further, because every now and again they'd have one they couldn't find like one game. So they would go back to like, you know, Chris Bosio, you know, in Beloit once struck out 14 men, you know, or something.
Right.
And you'd be like, Beloit, like that's 6 years? How is that a thing? So I think as if we ever did one that had a sentence that was meaningful, like the Mike Greenwell one, we'd have to like delete it. Like we need an editor to make sure that nothing that would put the season even remotely into context would be included.
We need an editor to go to find one of the least meaningful things of facts about each player and then put them at the bottom of each card. Yes.
Right.
It's the opposite of what you would think the editor would need to do. We need you to find an utterly worthless fact so that we can print it in small letters at the bottom of this player's card. Yeah,
exactly. I think it'd really be actually pretty easy to do. You know, I mean, I think that for an editor, like I was actually just about to look up. So, you know, we're doing something on, obviously we would, you know, one of our big cards would obviously be the Tommy Pham card.
Of course.
And Tommy Pham had a great year and we'd be like, oh, well, we got to do something with Tommy Pham. And we would have to say Tommy Pham got one hit in four tries on June 13th in a doubleheader against the Brewers.
Right.
It's just,
well, what you just go, yeah, what, is, what you'd want to say is like Tommy Pham knocked in the tying run with a single to right in a game against the Phillies on July 19th. That's what you want. You don't want anything that indicates that he was a 300, 400, 500 guy at all.
Right.
Oh, we have a special card for that. Obviously, there's the first 25 or 30 cards in our set are going to be special cards that commemorate. Because that's the other thing I miss.
Yes.
I miss the sets where they had like, it was like they had special cards devoted to, well, first they have like in action. We need in action cards, right? You agree with that? We have to have in like, remember it was like Juan Samuel in action, and it had like in the 82 set or something, it had that striped, that double striped on the left that curled like.
Loved it. Yeah. Oh, the hockey puck, the hockey stick. That was 82.
Yeah. So the hockey in action stick, cards. Yeah. But I also like the cards where there was, I think it's the 85 set maybe. It was like, Carlton Fisk sets all-time record for games caught by a catcher. And, you know, October 1st, you know, whatever, 1984. And there was just like weird milestones like that. Like Dwight Evans, you know, sets a record for most You know, like for, oh, he's Dwight Evans 1 year hit a home run on the, he was the leadoff hitter 1 year and he hit a home run on the first pitch and they had made a card to commemorate that totally stupid thing. So we need, there need to be like the first 20 or so cards have to be cards that commemorate things that happened over the season. And some of them can be big. Some of them can be like when Ricky Henderson stole his, broke the stolen base record, right. Ryan struck out his whatever 5,000th guy in the same day, whatever that was. That's fine. But I also want cards that commemorate kind of boring things that happened, like just setting records for like games played or you know, or relief appearances in a year. You know, like if.
Well, I'm looking at a great one. I'm looking at the 1985. Topps Juan Samuel card, since you mentioned Topps Juan Samuel. It is the number 8 card because I'm looking at it here. And it is, first of all, it's not an inaction card. It's a record breaker card.
Yes, that's what you want.
Breaker. Those are awesome. Juan Samuel, Phillies, most stolen bases rookie season, which is fairly big.
No, but it's also stupid. Ideal. It's also stupid. That's why it's great. It's like, okay, it's a legit record. It's interesting, but like you're talking about, like you're going to make 15 special cards for things that happened last year. That's the best you got is the day Juan Samuel set the rookie NL stolen base mark.
That's great. And there's a great picture of him kind of looking at the camera, like, "What? What did I do?" I mean, he's like, he's got a confused look on his face.
Why are you taking my picture? Didn't we already do this? You already took my picture. What do you mean a second card of me for what? Really?
All right. Oh, record breaker cards for sure. Yeah. In action cards for sure. What about the old fashioned traded cards? Did you like the traded? Yeah.
Now, here's the problem with the traded set, though. The traded cards would come out later in the year, and they became during the baseball card bubble. The traded cards became the weird coveted thing where you had to have that card. And so I'm a little worried. I love them. But I'm a little worried that they might have too much inherent value because they're like rarer.
Oh.
You know what I mean? We want to stop anything.
Well, I say we do it only at the beginning of the year. I say we only do it at the beginning of the year. People who are traded during the offseason. And the only way to do it is to have a picture of them in their old team's uniform, but with the hat colored out and then the new logo.
Of course.
Very sketchily.
Very crudely like, that's stamped on there. Yeah. Can we also have, by the way, can we have future stars where there's three guys on a car?
Oh, definitely. To me, those are the best. Now, the problem with those, of course, is they're rookie cards. So people will think, but I say we do them, people that are not going to be future stars.
Oh, well, if you go back, what's so fun to go back and look at your old sets is how frequently they were wrong.
Well, like you look at it, like a lot of times they were taking 28-year-old like AAA guys. Like who was the scout that thought this guy who is 28, you know, who hit 12 home runs in AAA?
There was zero thought put into the future stars. But I would vote that for almost every card, but certainly every future stars card, the everyone has to have either a mustache or glasses or both. Everyone needs to look like
a beard.
Kittle. I would allow a beard, but everyone, I would say you either have to have a mustache/mustache beard or glasses or both, because to me that is the essence of those old sets is how many mustaches there were.
You know, Juan Samuel in this card has a mustache. Of course, very strong.
Of course, mustache. Juan Samuel has a mustache. You thought Juan Samuel was not going to have a mustache? What are you out of your mind?
No, I knew he was going to have a mustache. Yeah, so I agree with the future mustache stars. I don't know if we'll be able to find enough future mustache stars, but you know, once this set takes off, people are going to grow mustaches.
They want it. Well, the way we do it is we basically say, you know, instead of 792 cards or whatever it is now, we say, look, this number of cards in this set will be the number that we decide it is, and it'll change every year. So if you want in, you have to have a mustache, and people without mustaches are not allowed. So there will be no Aaron Judge. There will be no Aaron Judge card because Aaron Judge does not have a mustache. So if Aaron Judge going into the 2019 set, you want to get in on this, grow a mustache. It's up to you, man. Balls in your
mustache. Only way you're getting only way you're getting in. So we're really going to have a very small set, which I think is good.
Yeah.
I think that we don't want this thing to be that big. This is a very rare group. And look, if one team buys in and everybody on that team grows a mustache, they're all in. I mean, there's just nothing we can do about that.
Yeah, that.
I like it.
We are not dictating the terms under which the players can be included. I mean, we are, but it's up to them. In other words, they can opt in, right? We're saying, here's the deal. This is a set of baseball cards with future stars cards, in action cards, record breaker cards, and then regular people cards. Oh, we got to have all of the managers though, too. We got to manager cards, obviously.
Now, what about the old fashioned where you take the whole picture of the team and then you put the manager like in a little circle?
100%. We got to have team checklist cards. Yeah.
Well, that's always the back of the manager card is the team checklist, that's right?
And then, but what we're saying is anyone can get in on this as long as you have a mustache or glasses or both. The glasses preferably should have sort of squarish lenses. You know what I mean? Like they shouldn't.
But we'll accept all glasses.
We'll accept all glasses. But ideally, they should have that sort of like the 1983 White Sox team had like five of these guys where they had sort of like square lenses.
Yeah, I'd say if you have square glasses, your number will probably end in a zero, right? You'll probably get one of our star turns if you have the square glasses.
You'll be number 10 or 20. Can we also, for no reason at all, have cards of both Garth and Dane Iorn? We just pretend that they're still in the league.
Basically, every year we will include an obscure brother set. That's what we're just going to call it, the obscure brother set. And certainly
the obscure brothers.
Obscure brothers. And certainly the first year it'll be Garth and Dane, right? That has to be.
Got to be.
Who's more obscure?
The problem with some of the brother sets is that one of them's famous, right? There's Cal and Billy Ripken.
That can't happen. But we could do Billy.
Hank and Tommy Aaron.
Well, what if we did Billy Ripken and Tommy Aaron and just did lesser brothers? That feels to me like that amazing. Would work.
Yeah. Well, here's what we do. We we have the card number one of the set is it's Billy Ripken and Tommy Aaron, and it says like brothers, you know, brothers in arms or whatever. And on the back it says collect this card and the corresponding Cal Ripken and Hank Aaron card to win a special prize. And then we don't release a Cal Ripken and Hank Aaron card. We only have the Billy Ripken and Tommy
people
Aaron
card. People are just cards. Buying and pack after just pack nuts. Just trying to get. Do you have one? Have you gotten one yet?
That's right.
Oh, I love this. Now, what about those? And they stopped doing them to some degree, but like just those weird cards where they would just put like, for no reason, they'd put Rocky Colavito and Tito Francona together and just call them Tribe Sluggers or something. And they would just like.
Yeah, see, I don't like that. I don't like those ones. I never liked the ones where it was like, they do them a lot now because my jerk son, as you know, collects baseball cards. And so they do it. There's a lot of cards that have that kind of thing where it's like, you know, like there will be a card. Certainly the next year there will be a card with like, that says the Baby Bombers, and it'll be Gary Sanchez, Aaron Judge, and Giancarlo Stanton. But then there's other things. It'll be like, you know, just two seemingly random guys. It'll be like Carlos Correa and, you know, and Manny Machado on a card together, and it'll say like infield
young sluggers.
Infield power or something. And it just feels like lame. It just feels like an attempt to get more of their stars, more cards with just like star players on them. And I think that's kind of lame. It's like you want the Carlos Correa card stops meaning something when there's like 15 cards that Carlos Correa appears on. You know what I mean? Like, I don't like them. Being no reason for to put more famous people on more cards. I think that's lame. We're not going to do that.
Well, I think that's right. Well, I agree with that, but I'm going to take it to another level. I think every one of our in-action cards needs to be of a player that's not that great.
Right.
Right? I think that we don't want two Carlos Correa cards in this thing at all. So we're not going to put like an in-action card of Carlos Correa, but we might put an in-action card of, say, I don't know. I mean, think of some, you know,
right. There's a couple ways to reliever. Do it, right? One is you pick random people and just say in action, right? It's like, it's anyone you, anyone you can think of. You just say, and it's just, you know, it's, what's his name? J-Pierre and Sebia in action, right? So you can do that. You can just do a bunch of backup catchers in action or whatever. Oh, by the way, there's a third way. One is you do random players. Two is you do only backup catchers. All backup catchers in the league get their own in action card. But then the third way would be to say, hey, let's pick out the guys who aren't superstars but deserve like, oh, for like example, this. Billy Hamilton. Billy Hamilton's never going to make an all-star team. Yes. He's not really that good an all-around player. But who deserves an in action card more than Billy Hamilton? His whole thing is action. So we could do it that way, yes, where it's actually a deserving set of players who aren't going to get that special player treatment that we then give that special player treatment to because we want to celebrate their skills. How's that?
Well, then shouldn't we just do the podcast? We shouldn't just do the podcast fun players, the funnest players, and make them in action.
Yeah, funnest players.
Funnest players.
So we'll do in action cards of backup catchers. I really like that idea.
the best part of in action cards, by the way, is that almost always they're not
right
in action in the picture.
No.
There's just a picture of them like they're not even swinging the bat. They're holding the bat in the on deck circle or something. That's not in action. Well,
but the other thing is like if the standard baseball card picture was that everyone was in a photo booth or something, and then you got in action, right, and it was a guy actually at bat or swinging the bat. That's one thing. But many baseball cards, even in that era, were guys sliding into second or in the field ready to take a grounder or something. So there's no difference in the picture of the player in action or the player in their regular card, because it was a very common occurrence that the main card's picture would be that person in action. So it didn't make any sense, which is why I think my plan to do exclusively backup catchers, backup catchers in action, that to me
in action, and they're all sitting on the bench. We're just pictures of them all sitting.
Or
on
they're
the bench.
Like pulling the mask down over their face after like throwing it. Like they threw the mask off to go get a foul ball. The ball landed in the crowd. Then they're walking back and they're reaching down to pick their mask up off the ground. That's what I want for my in action cards.
What about them going to warm up the pitcher where they're not even wearing like the full gear,
great,
and they just have the mask on?
Okay, here's my next pitch. That'd be good. Here's my next pitch. So we do a series of cards in action, right, of backup catchers doing various, right, things. Then we do another series of cards called in action, one word, meaning they're not doing, they're at a moment of inaction. And those are middle relievers sitting.
Those are the best players.
You could do it that way. Yeah, so you have Giancarlo Stanton in action and just him sitting on the bench or whatever. That's great. We could do that.
Just totally sitting there.
Yeah, or standing motionless with it, or lying in a bed. Like, you wheel in a lazy boy into the studio and you just lie them down and their eyes are closed and they're sitting there motionless, like in a sensory deprivation tank. Yeah.
Oh, I love this so much. Hey, look what I got. I got the Carlos Correa in action card.
I got the Mike Trout in action card.
Oh, should they all be specialty cards? Do we even need any like real cards?
I think we need one real card, and I think it should be Tommy Pham.
Only the podcast.
Only the actual official player. So for the 2016 set, it's Matt Caesar, right? For the 2017 set, it's Tommy Pham. And now this brings us around to a whole new thing, which we need to put out there. We have time, but we are in the market for 2018 for an official player to adopt for the podcast.
We are totally
Tommy Pham ascends to the heavens after making it to the 300, yes, 400, 500. His number's in the rafters. His number has been retired in the podcast hall of fame.
Totally retired.
But we're in the market, yes, and we want to solicit a listener opinions on this. We are in the market for a new player to adopt for the whole season. But here's the thing. I don't know. We haven't talked about this, but I believe what is going to push us over the top is a compelling reason to adopt this player, right? Yes. It's not just like, yes, oh, this guy's fun to watch or this guy is whatever. Tommy Pham, the reason we adapted Matt Caesar is because of his last name, which is the best last name in sports.
Which, that's as compelling as guess, yeah, right there.
By the way, you're right. What we mean by, quote, compelling, end quote. Tommy Pham, we adopted because out of nowhere, he was on the hunt for a 300, 400, 500 season, which he then achieved, which, congratulations. Those two guys are in the Hall of Fame.
Congratulations,
they're in, Tommy Pham. They've ascended into the firmament.
To the Hall of Fame?
To the Hall of Fame, that's right. And now what we need for 2018, and we won't have to make this decision until April, but we need suggestions for players that we can officially adopt as the official player of the podcast, and then track their progress over the course of the whole year and root for them for something. And I don't, and it's like the more obscure, the better, but like we just have the thing that will decide who we choose, whom we choose is the reason behind the choice. It's the compelling That's right. story, the compelling narrative of this player, whether that player is a career minor leaguer or one of the biggest stars in the game. We don't care. We just want the compelling reason.
Yeah. And that's exactly right. We have no, absolutely, as you can tell by the two people we chose off the cuff, we have no preconceived notions about what this has to be, right? This could be anything.
Could be
absolutely anything. So, yeah. So send in your compelling podcast player, and we're going to do that for 2018. So exciting. I really feel like this baseball card thing is going to happen. I feel like we're going to make this happen.
Well, there's a couple problems with it, as I'm sure you're aware. Number one is we don't have the rights to use anyone's picture.
not even one. We don't even have one right.
Not even one.
No, not even one right.
Number two, right? We have no knowledge of or ability to actually make baseball cards.
Nope.
Knowledge of how to do it or actually.
Not a clue.
Number three, we have no one's paying for this except us. So any money that we sink into this has to be our own money, which seems like a bad idea.
That seems like a poor idea. Yeah.
And number four, the fourth thing that's working against us is the second this podcast is over, both of us are going to forget about this.
Well, that's right. In fact, if somebody sends in, it's like, hey, I'm a baseball card person and I think I can help you make this come to life. Both of us are going to say, what are you talking about?
What are you talking about? Oh, I remember that. We talked about that on the podcast. And let me throw one thing on, then we should get to our draft because we're already 40 minutes into this thing, which is insane.
Insane.
This was supposed to be the short
one. It was supposed to be the short one.
Let me throw one more thing at you.
Yes.
If we ever come across somehow the knowledge of how to make baseball cards and the ability to make baseball cards, and we actually want to follow through on this, another thing we could do is make a set of podcast baseball cards where the people on the cards are us and our friends and associates. So in other words, right now, if we made the set, it would be you and me,
right?
Our producer TJ,
right,
would have a card. Obviously Alan Sepinwall, Linda Holmes, Mike DiCenzo, Brandon McCarthy would all have cards. Sure. And then we could sort of branch out. We could try to make a Tommy Pham card. If he didn't give us the rights to use his image, we could just write his name or something, or like have a generic figure that we pretend, or from the back that we pretend is Tommy Pham or something. We could make a set of cards that have just people from the show. You know what I mean? From the podcast.
I think that would be tremendous. Nobody would want that, but I would love to do that. I would love to do I just think we should make baseball cards. That's what I'm saying.
Well, that's why I brought it up, because I feel like the thing that the most excites you about this is just making baseball cards.
Yeah, I want
cards,
to make
right?
baseball cards. I feel like, you know, that in some ways, and I don't blame anybody. This is just what happened. It was during a stretch of time where nostalgia kind of took over and the prices started going up. And then the kids who were collecting baseball cards, that was the environment they grew up in. They couldn't buy 15-cent packs anymore. They needed to be smart and shrewd about how they collected because there's value. And I assume that your son is in addition to loving baseball cards the way that we did, probably sees it as a slightly different thing, right? Because he knows which cards are the collectible cards, which ones are the biggies and all that. I assume, yes, no?
Yeah, I mean, he's nine, so it's mostly based on star players.
Okay.
And he's also really into basketball cards. So they have like basketball and baseball and football, for that matter. They have like these jersey cards, you know, that are, they're like eight times as thick as a normal baseball card.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then they have a little piece of like ostensibly like a game-worn jersey. And so he's really into those because those are like,
they're cool.
He's like, right. you know. Yeah, they're cool and stuff. So, but mostly it's just based on like who he got a Kyrie Irving card the other day, and he's become like I have become a huge Celtics fan, and so he was really psyched about just having a Kyrie Irving. It's just based on stardom more than anything.
That's cool. Look at those cards for my 51st birthday. I had my 51st birthday this week, and my family got me a bunch of like toys for my birthday because that's what they think of me. And so they bought me like a Rock'em Sock'em robot set, and they bought me some sort of Space Invaders thing that I could plug into the TV, and a few other things. But they also bought me a box of Star Wars cards, which is cool. And it's unfortunately not the old Star Wars cards, which were awesome. They're fantastic because they're even worse than baseball cards. Like they're just out of
early.
Oh, they're terrible. Yeah. Out of focus pictures of like Chewbacca and with like a horrible little Chewbacca takes care of business or something below it. You know, it's ridiculous. So it wasn't quite like that, but in it, the reason I bring that up, there was like one specialty card in the box, and it was like 20 times thicker than a regular card. And it was like a piece of the Death Star. I didn't really get it, but I assume that's the deal, right? The deal is like these incredibly cool and involved specialty cards. None of those in the podcast set. Like there's no, if we do one, it would be just some incredibly stupid thing that we would just throw in. Like we would put in a picture of peanut butter and jelly sandwich and make it like special.
Ooh, but now you're talking because now you're broadening in a good way the definition of what could be on these cards. It could be just things. It doesn't have to be people necessarily.
That's true.
We would put famous. We would put famous things from the podcast, like peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, or like the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, or whatever. things that were notable about one of the many pointless discussions we had over the course of the year. Those would get their own cards.
Yes. Right? No. Absolutely.
I like this.
Yeah. We're going to make this happen. One last thing about the podcast before we go on to our draft. Did you see the tweet from the young woman who sent us both a tweet saying, and I should find her name somewhere, saying that she had to have an MRI for some reason. She didn't go into detail about why. And she said that when she went to the MRI, her mother told her in order to relax herself, because it is a little bit involved getting an MRI, in order to relax herself, her name is Catherine. I'm going to just say it because I just looked it up. She should sing the Browns update song in her head.
Yes.
And she said it was incredibly helpful and made her and helped her. And I was so excited about this because to me, that is the first good thing the podcast has ever done.
And simultaneously, the first good thing the Cleveland Browns have ever done.
How could both of those things come together in one place? It's so
great.
That's
the magic of the Brown song, I think.
It is a good song. It's a really good song. David Von Kampen wrote that song and did it. He has emailed us to ask if there's going to be if we didn't want any new songs. He's emailed us if we have any new things to do. So once we choose our podcast player, we might have to send him
a song for that. Yeah, absolutely.
A little song for that. We had because the Tommy Pham song was fantastic. It was just great.
Wonderful.
All right, let's go on to our draft. But before we do that, do you have anything on your mind? Anything at all?
It's funny that you asked that question because there is one thing that I've been thinking about. And before we get to the draft, I wanted to take a moment to tell you about it. It's called The Cut Forecast. Now, Joe, The Cut Forecast is a podcast from the staff of MLB.com's. I already screwed it up. Oh, man. You know, let's make a New Year's resolution. New Year's resolution for 2018, we're going to find a new bit to do. Instead of the bit where I pretend like I'm doing this off the top of my head, we got to find a whole new approach to it.
All right.
I don't know what it is. I'm not going to do it right now, but we're going to find a new bit to do about these reads that we have to do for the.
I agree. I think okay. We should.
Is the last one of these that we'll do in this way. And then starting next time we do this, we'll have a new joke, a new equally worthless joke to do about these reads.
So I couldn't agree more.
Over to that topic. I want to take a moment to tell you about The Cut Forecast. The Cut Forecast is the podcast from the staff of MLB.com's Cut 4 section, which focuses on the lighter side of baseball. If you've made it this far into our podcast, and by the way, now's the moment we realize we're only talking to like a third of the people that started. If you've made it this far into our podcast, we really think you'll enjoy it. It'll make you laugh, and you might even learn something about baseball dogs or ballpark food. Last week's episode debated which MLB player is having the most fun this offseason and put forth some truly outlandish baseball predictions for 2018. If that sounds like something you're into, search Cut Forecast, that's C-U-T, the number 4, C-A-S-T, in Apple Podcasts or wherever else you get your podcasts, and click subscribe. And now, on with the show.
On with the show. Wow, that was rough. You had a little, but once you centered yourself, it worked out pretty well. By the way, what do you think those truly outlandish baseball predictions for 2018 were?
I don't know. We should listen to the Cut Forecast, and then
we should listen and find out what those. I want to know, because look, they didn't say they're outlandish. They said they're truly outlandish.
Yeah, they're going out on a limb there, aren't they?
Let's face it. I don't even think we even hit that truly outlandish type level. All right. Our draft this week is as stupid as all of the other ones. And also one that we spent no time discussing what we were even talking about.
Correct.
But we are drafting office supplies, right? That's the whole draft.
That's it.
Office supplies. All right. You have the first pick in our office supply draft. You
do. Do I really?
You got like the fifth pick in the music draft in the Christmas holiday.
That's true.
Music.
I went very late, but it didn't matter because everyone chose insanely, except for Linda. Linda chose well. There is somebody out there.
I don't even know if I should mention it because he's obviously a guy who needs help. Who does a recap for every single podcast on Reddit?
Right.
Which is. By the way, he does it's wonderful. It really is.
We have our own subreddit now, this podcast.
We have our own subreddit, yeah. And it's awesome. Anyway, he gave that draft to Alan Sepinwall.
Wow, really?
Yeah. So he's a wonderful guy. His recaps are much funnier than this show. But no, you giving that to Alan Sepinwall just sort of – I think you should stop judging these drafts because that –
That's
sort
shocking. That's truly shocking. I would have had Sepinwall in third or fourth, I think, in that draft.
That's what I thought. Well, we know who's fifth. I mean, we know. bless his baseball soul. All right.
The number one pick in the office supply draft, I'm going to go with scissors.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a little bit of a reach, I think.
It's a little bit of a reach that high, yeah.
But here's the thing about scissors. This is what I've realized. And you have kids. I have kids. You really realize this when you have kids. If you don't have scissors at the moment you need scissors, it is the most annoying thing in the world. And thus, correspondingly, if you do have scissors at the moment you need scissors, you are so happy.
So happy.
Because there is no short of, like, there's no easy way to compensate for a lack of scissors. You can fold multiple times and then gently rip down a pretty decent crease. You can do that. You can just tear or rip whatever. But like there is no easy switch out in the way that if you don't have, let's say, a pad of paper, you can grab the back of an envelope. You can write on your hand. Right. You can jot down whatever. There's other options available too. If you don't have a pen, you might have a pencil or a marker or a Sharpie, whatever. There, if you don't have scissors, it just is the worst. And also, by the way, scissors, great product, wonderful invention. They do exactly what you want them to do, exactly the way you want them to do it. And there are so many areas of your life where you need a pair of scissors, and they make your life so much better when you have them. I just am impressed with them as an object, and I also am wary of. There have been so many times when I've been burned by not having them, which is why I'm making them my number one pick.
I think it's a good pick. I'm gonna go with you on that. I think that the idea of not having scissors when you need them, whatever the case may be, you're opening a box or you've got to, obviously you've got to cut something, but generally speaking, when you need them, you're right. There's never anything on your desk.
Yeah.
Like the closest thing you got is like a, like keys. Maybe I can like jab into this with keys or something. There's no,
or you have to go to the kitchen to get a knife and you're a little worried that when you're opening the box with a knife, you're going to slice your finger open or something. Like it's all of the substitutes for them are crude substitutes.
You're right. And they're fantastic. I'm going to give it to you. That's a good pick. Good pick. All right. With my first pick, I'm going to go the obvious choice after scissors, which is paper. Again, the problem with paper in many ways, obviously we're trying to move away from paper, but it's still necessary. It's still hugely necessary. I don't know if I mentioned this to you, but I'm writing a book. Have I mentioned this to you? I don't probably
think so. No,
I would think we have a podcast. I should mention it. It's about Harry Houdini, which is interesting topic. And what I decided I was going to do is I was going to do it without using paper. That I was essentially going to keep all of my files in various computer, different programs, different apps. Using Evernote, using a couple of other places. I'm like, I can keep it all in there. It's searchable that way. It's easy that way. Totally didn't work. Totally did not work. It's not having that just right in front of you as a piece of paper, being able to just kind of go through a little filing system to get what I need. I found it to be, and I did not expect this, incredibly frustrating without having paper. So I had to go through and print out every single thing that I'd kept on the computer, which was, thousands of pages, basically, because I needed it. I needed a physical thing. So I think paper, even in this world, is underrated. It's great. You never can have too much of it. And plus, in a pinch, it will always beat rock. So I'm going to go with paper.
It's a good choice. I mean, it's not exciting, right? It's not even as exciting a choice as scissors. It's like the really solid right tackle that you pick. And it's Jake Long. You just chose Jake Long. It's like, yes, he's going to be on your team for a long time. He's going to make the Pro Bowl. He's like going to be a solid fixture on the team. He's just never going to, the fan base isn't going to go crazy for paper.
No, no. You know but I mean, what is scissors though? Scissors is more like a, sort of a bruiser back, right? 1,000-yard back, maybe for you, like, but not.
Yeah.
Not
actually, I think of a scissors as like a Odell Beckham type, like a game-changing wide receiver.
Oh wow!
A specific like skill set, but like the best at that skill set. Well, that's maybe. What I think. Yeah.
Maybe. All right.
All right. I'm gonna go. My number two. But anyway, the point is, you made a good pick. It's a solid pick. No one. You're sort of moneyballing this a little bit, right? You're saying like, look, I'm not going for the flashy thing. I'm going for the thing that works.
Exactly. Just for the thing that works.
All right. I'm going to go with Scotch tape for number two.
Wow. That's a little higher than the experts had it going.
Again, a little bit of a reach, but I really love Scotch tape. Scotch tape is fun to play with. The dispenser I find it to be aesthetically pleasing. The sound of it ripping off and tearing is pleasing. It's also, it has an incredible number of uses, like everything from hanging up like kids' art on the refrigerator to posters on the wall when you don't really care about the wall to sealing packages to like sealing envelopes in a way that makes it, like where do you want double protection on an envelope? Like there's just when there's a bunch of tape around in your life, you use the tape all the time. And there's so many there. And it just really works. Like it's really good at what it does. You know, it's like a workhorse. It's reliable. You know, the tensile strength of it. So when there's a situation where you know that using tape won't work, you're like, nah, that's not for tape. We need something else there. You know what I mean? Like you have a good gauge in your mind of how strong it is, what it can hold, what it can't hold. It's just like a really stable, it is a sort of it's a pick like paper, I think. It's not flashy, but it's just such a good thing. It just gets the job done. So that's my number two.
I do like some tape. It's a solid pick. I've actually thought about this, that there are people at 3M or wherever people are making scotch, I guess, making their tape, where they're trying to make tape stickier, right? Like there had to be people studying how to improve their product. I mean, I assume that tape is whatever, 20% stickier now than it was in 1978 or something like that.
But, I love that. But probably not. They probably don't want to make it too sticky because then it's like hard to get off.
Exactly right. Right.
It's like they've probably gotten a hit a point in their testing where it's like, no, this is too sticky. Now we can't get it off of the refrigerator once we remove the kid's art or whatever.
That's a great point. And you're right. I mean, because you want the best kind of tape is the tape that you can put on and then it'll stay there. It's not moving. But if you need to take it off, you're not taking off like a little tiny strip of it and then another little strip. I mean, it's coming off in one thing. So
comes off. That's what you need. Yeah.
That's really that pick is getting better in my mind because there's a lot of brain power that has to go behind the Scotch tape,
yes,
right?
Yes, I know. It's a great product.
It is a good product. What about like other kinds of like masking tape or any of that kind of stuff?
I have no time for masking tape. I think it's ugly. I don't think it's usually not that much better or more effective than, I mean, it's obviously more durable. The one kind of tape that I'll give it up for besides regular Scotch tape is packing tape because like, if you need to ship something, like I really do not actively do not like electrical tape. And I know that electrical tape has a number of like industrial uses that it's like you can only use electrical tape for, but I don't like the look of it. That it's either silver or black and it's big, thick, coarse tape, and I just hate it. I think I don't like it nearly as much as I like a Scotch tape.
By the way, you know how on Pod Saves America, they pick a little like snippet of something that somebody says, and that's what they name the particular podcast. Like somebody will, it's always something about Trump, but like somebody will say some Trump thing, and then they'll use those words as the name.
Right.
The name of this podcast should be, I have no use for masking tape. That should be, because I think somebody would see that. They're like, how would that have come up? How is that possible that would have come up in any conversation at all?
I love it. I love it. It sounds great to me. I'm fine with that being the title.
All right. My second pick, I'm going to go. I got to admit getting a little bit pressured from the family on this one, but I do like it. It's a good product. I'm going to go with the stapler as a product. I think it's a solid, you need to have it office supply. It certainly is good at what it does, depending on how much paper you're willing to stuff into it. And there's some staplers that are obviously better than others. But I've got a particularly good stapler that I got probably 10 years ago. It's got like some heft to it. You put the, you know, really up to any number of pages, it totally bolts those pages together. Now I've got one happy, you know, sort of collection of paper rather than sort of scattered all over the place. I think it does its job well. It's kind of ingenious that they came up with this way of doing it with the little tiny piece of metal piercing through the paper and then folding exactly right on the other end. Totally, totally smart. You know, that guy's a bajillionaire, whoever invented it, and deservedly so. It's just a fantastic piece of machinery. So I'm going with the stapler.
It's a good pick. Again, it's not the flashiest.
No, it's not.
You know, but it's a good pick. The staplers are cool. It's a very satisfying office supply to use. It just is very. It's
yes.
The slamming your flat part of your fist down on a stapler and pulling the paper back that once was separated and now is joined in,
it's so cool.
In holy office supply matrimony. It's very, very satisfying. The sound of it is satisfying. The act of it is satisfying. It has a finality to it. It's a good pick. I have no problem with your pick. I'm going to go number three, I think, as a steal, frankly, though it's a very specific item that has very limited use here in the year 2018. I still think it's a total steal. And that's the manual pencil sharpener. I love pencil sharpeners. I love them so much. No one uses pencils anymore for anything, really. No one has pencils in their house. No one needs pencils. I still do crossword puzzles. And when I am preparing to do a crossword puzzle and I sharpen my pencil in a manual pencil sharpener, it feels like I'm putting on war paint. I'm putting on nerd war paint. That's and talk about something that, like, recently the pencil sharpener that I use has ceased to be effective. It started to wear down. It didn't, the pencils didn't fit right in it, so it wasn't giving me a good sharpen. I went to the drugstore and I bought a new pencil sharpener, and man, is this thing good. Oh man, it just is. Like, I put these pencils in there and I twist them a couple times, and what comes out is the most aesthetically pleasing, perfect long cone shaped shaved down part of the pencil and razor sharp point that you could possibly ever hope for. And it just delights me to no end. I just love it. I love the feeling of sharpening a pencil. It feels so, I like the memories that I have from school of doing it, I do it once a month. I will sharpen a pencil and I still find it to be so enjoyable and pleasing. So I know it's a crazy reach. Pencil sharpener, I'm sure, wasn't even on your board, but I don't care. I'm taking it before I have run the risk of losing it.
It was not on my board, although I do like a pencil sharpener, but I need some clarity on what you're saying. Obviously, manual, you're not talking about the electric ones, which I get.
No, I get
that, but...
Garbage.
garbage, right. But here's my question. When you say manual pencil sharpener, are you talking about the kind that is mounted, that you put your pencil in and twist the thing?
No. Are you talking about
the pool cue one, where you're twisting the little
talking about the pool cue. I'm talking about a small handheld device that you insert your pencil in and you twist it like a pool cue, chalking up a pool cue. I don't, those super old timey ones, like those 1950s or 60s ones where you crank them around, right. The silver those, handle. I don't love those. I could take or leave.
Yeah, I kind of like those.
It's fine. I'm talking about a thing where the pool cue is the exact right analogy.
Right. You paid like $1.99 for it, is what you're telling me.
Maybe.
So my question then is, and this is, you know, maybe we're dealing with a skill set that you have. I never get my pencil sharp enough using it that way. I like a very sharp point. And
I do too.
I twist the little thing and I get like, I don't get that sharp a point.
I think you may need a new pencil sharpener, my friend. Come to the Rite Aid I go to in Los Angeles and get yourself one of the ones I just got, and you'll have a different experience.
My kids have an electric pencil sharpener, and I say it's my kids because I would never have allowed it. I don't like them, and the reason I don't like them is not being anti technology. They eat up the pencil, right? You put the pencil in. And in order to get it sharp enough, I mean, it just tears the pencil down. I mean, that pencil completely. Is right. It's like a third its size when you take out a brand new pencil, much less if you have to sharpen a pencil where the point broke. So
they're straight up bad. They will they are probably reducing the amount of pencil that you use over the life of the pencil by like 40%, I would say.
Yeah, I agree. It's no good. All right. My third pick I feel like I'm just going solid. I'm just trying to build my office here. And sure. I'm going to take pens. I'm going to take just pens as my office. I like pens a lot. My dad is something of a pen collector. So he collects like some of the higher end, I don't know how high end they are, but I mean, he buys like, you know, pens that are, you know, fancier and, you know, the kind that you get your own initial put on them or whatever, which is cool. That's that way I always have a gift to get him for his birthday. Cause he loves those kinds of pens, which is great. And I like those fine. They're fine. But I have been on a search pretty much my whole life for the perfect pen. And I've not found it yet. I found a few pens that are pretty close, but a pen that glides at exactly the right width, exactly the, it's not too thick, certainly can't have it where it smears. I mean, that goes without saying.
Sure.
But a perfect writing utensil pen has been a surge. And I go into office stores not infrequently, sadly to say, and I just walk up and down the pen aisle trying to find exactly the right pen, which I've not found. I found some very, very good pens, though, and I will buy those pens somewhat in bulk. I love a good pen. I just love a good writing
when
pen.
You find, so, the thing about pens is when you find the one that's yours, that's like, this is my pen, it's the greatest feeling.
It is the greatest.
Oh, man. Like the feel of it and the... You're right. It's like everything about it. The feel of the nub on the paper, the I feel like, honestly, when I find a pen that I love, my handwriting gets better.
I'm totally right.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's totally. I love a pen. I love a good pen. Have you found what you would consider to be like, have you found your pen of choice where if you buy pens, you will always buy this kind of pen?
You know, I do so little handwriting now.
Yeah.
I don't have the need for it in the way that I used to. I feel like in college, I don't even remember what it was, but in college I had one that was I discovered it. It was not a rollerball. It was a felt point. And I remember like every time I would see them, I would go like, "Oh, that's the one." And I would buy like 10 of them. Cause it just felt right when I used it. But now I do so little writing that isn't on a computer. It's kind of a bummer when I think about it. Anyway, good choice. You're like the Cleveland Browns GM, just saying like, look guys, we need everything here, right?
We need everything. Exactly.
This is a nuts and bolts draft for us. We need offensive linemen and we need defensive linemen and we need like middle linebackers and safeties.
That's right.
We're not going for like the flashy LSU wide receiver or the Florida State cornerback or something. We're going for just like, we're just going for like Big Ten offensive linemen. That's what we're doing.
I think the pen is a middle linebacker that makes tackles.
That's right. That's exactly what it is. The pen is Luke Kuechly. You just drafted Luke Kuechly.
And I'm happy with that.
I'm going to go number four. I'm going to go with the envelope.
Ooh.
Yeah. I'm not 100% behind. I can't get 100% behind this, frankly. but here's my rationale. The envelope has two great things about it. Great thing number one is the feeling of sealing an envelope when you're sending something to someone and you seal the envelope and you like put a stamp on it and you drop it in the mailbox. Yeah. Very satisfying. And then on the back end, on the B side of that transaction, receiving an envelope and opening it is also very exciting. Like I kind of even miss the like old days that you see in like a Game of Thrones when you not only seal the envelope with like a hot wax and like a like that thing. I kind of wish we still did that because it really does like, I think the act of sealing it and sending it to the world is great, and the act of receiving it and opening it is also great. And so it's a pretty, like, there aren't that many things that are great on both sides of the transaction. Like everyone who uses an envelope is happy, you know, like on both ends. So I think the sort of like gentle, the obtuse angle of the flap is kind of pleasing. I even kind of weirdly like the taste of the like sticky thing that you lick with your tongue. I just like it all. I like envelopes. I'm going envelope number two.
You know what? I like envelopes too. I feel like that is a very strong pick. I like that there are different sizes. Obviously you have different, you know, envelopes for different purposes. So you have the, you know, when you send a letter to someone, there's that envelope, which is cool.
Right.
When you send like something in a business way, that envelope is cool. And then certainly the bigger envelopes are awesome.
Sure.
You know, we don't want to fold this envelope. And you're right. No matter what you get, even if you know what's inside it, you are pretty excited to open it up because you're thinking, well, maybe there's something else in there. There might be something.
And if you don't know what's inside it and it's from like a person that you know, you're like, oh, what's this? What's going on?
What
like,
is this?
You know, I also like the padded envelope. That's its own exciting thing. Like when there's a little bit like, wait, this needs extra protection.
I actually even like the like FedEx envelope where you have to rip that strip off.
I kind of like that too. Yeah.
Open it. Yeah, I gotta say, I think you said that the pencil sharpener was a steal. I don't know, but I think envelope might have been a steal. I like the envelope.
All right.
I got to say, and I got to say, it wasn't necessarily next on my list. So I'm jealous of the envelope pick. I think that was a good pick. All right. With my fourth pick, I am, you know, I got to say, one of the things about compiling this list is I found a lot more Office things that I don't like than Office things that I do like, which is weird. I'm not going to pick any of those, obviously, but I've got a fairly extensive list of Office stuff I don't like. But I'll tell you what, I'm going to do with my fourth pick, I am going to go a little bit crazy, and this might be a little controversial. I'm going to go with the whiteboard as my fourth pick. I was not a guy who liked the whiteboard. I just kind of never really saw the point. I've never had a job where the whiteboard would necessarily come in handy. You know, as a writer in general, I don't really need a whiteboard. And we're not writing down, you know, goals for the year or whatever, anything, whatever it is that real people with real jobs do. But might have mentioned in writing this book, I got a whiteboard when I started this book because I wanted to be able to map out, because this is a little bit of a complicated book because I'm trying to tell two narratives all at the same time. They're sort of a modern narrative of magic and a Houdini narrative of his life. So I needed to map this out. I'm not really a visual person like that, but I thought, well, I better get a whiteboard and just kind of map this thing out so I'll know what I'm doing and all this. Oh my gosh, I love it. I love everything about it. I love the multicolored thing. I love that I can erase it and it's just gone. It just totally disappears. Way better than the chalkboard. I love that. I love it. It's right behind me right now when I'm doing it. I can just turn around and look at it and sort of visualize where my book is and what I need to do. And if I see something on or I don't like, boom, it's just gone. Just gone. Just totally get a little piece of a little eraser thing and it's gone. So maybe because I'm so surprised by how much I like it, I'm going with the whiteboard number 4.
It's a great choice. Do you use a magnetic whiteboard is my next question.
I think they're only magnetic ones. So I do have a couple of magnets on there.
So actually, writers' rooms, TV writers' rooms have used for years, have used what amounts to an index card system for breaking down episodes. Like you write like each beat of the episode on index cards and you used to pin them up to like a push pin board. And then like a cork board. Yeah. And then you could easily, the idea was like a beat changes. You look at the story laid out, act 1, act 2, act 3, and you go, you know what, that beat right there where, you know, she goes into the room and talks to that guy, we got to get rid of it. We got to change that to something. You just take the index card off and write a new one and put it in there. Now, recently we've moved away from the push pin system and into a whiteboard system that has magnets, and it's so much better. It's like a million times better because push pins are annoying, and because like hard to get out. Sometimes the board isn't secured to the wall, so when you try to remove a push pin from the thing, the whole board topples down on your head and tries to kill you. And then there's also the ability, though, when you're putting them up on with magnets on a whiteboard, you can then also write marginalia and notes and arrows and stuff on the whiteboard connecting different cards, or you can write reminders to yourself outside of the index cards. And it's like, what, this should have been the way we were doing this all along. I'm like furious retroactively for all of the years we wasted doing the old stupid pushpin system. Whiteboards are great, and dry erase is great, and the erasers are great, and the little spray thing that you use to clean it is great. Everything about it is great. It's wonderful. I'm a huge fan. I think you got a steal in the fourth round there. That was going to be my next pick, by the way.
All right,
fifth pick.
Okay.
All right. So for my fifth and final pick, now that that's off the board, I don't have a strong feeling about this. So I'm going to do a little, this is going to be a little crazy. It might be controversial. You might make fun of me for this, and you will have the right to make fun of me if you so choose. Okay. I'm going with the highlighter. There's kind of no point to them anymore if you're not in like academia, right? If you're a student who's reading books and taking notes and you need to remember certain things in your textbooks, highlighters work really well. For grown-ups, not so much. I mean, maybe if you're a CPA or you're in the legal profession or something, you need to highlight documents, I guess. For me, generally speaking, there's not a lot of use for it, except, Joe, that I now work on this show called The Good Place, which is has its backbone a lot of like philosophy. And so I've been sort of amateurishly putting myself through this like casual philosophy course that's completely ad hoc and that I'm just making up as I go along. But I'm in the mode now of reading these books, these complicated books. And I was like, you know what I really need? I need a highlighter because I'm reading. Yes, because I'm basically back in college, and I went and got myself a highlighter from the office supply thing at the show, and I started using the highlighter, and it's wonderful. It's just like it really helps when I'm going back. How it helps is like if I can't remember something, I'll go like, I remember this. I remember I highlighted this. And I'll flip through, and your eye is drawn as it's supposed to be. To the highlighted portions of the book, and then you find the thing you're looking for. It just works really well. It's like it has the effect of literally, obviously, highlighting things that are important and helping you remember them. So because of that specific circumstance of working on this show and having for the first time in probably 25 years a highlighter mean something to me, I'm going highlighter number 5.
I have to tell you, it was going to be my 5th pick. So I'm completely with you on the highlighter. First of all, your point is right. I'd say of all of the things that we have chosen today, maybe with the exception of scissors, maybe, nothing does its job any better than the highlighter. I mean, you want to talk about having one job. It's it. One job. And it totally works. I mean, you highlight a passage and then you flip the page and you go back, your eye goes right to that highlighted thing. It works. That is,
it does work. Not, yes, yeah, that's right.
Really, really good. And I have also, because there are tons and tons and tons of books I have to read for Houdini and things, I'm highlighting all the time and I'm highlighting in different colors. I've become much more organized for this book than I ever was for the Buck O'Neill book, which I just did off the top of my head, basically. I think the highlighter is really, really cool. Plus, it is also very, very pleasing to use, I think.
Yes.
The angle and the way that the point is like flat so you can – I think it's a very pleasing office supply, really.
Agree. It's very pleasing. Yes, absolutely.
All right. Well, I'm basically out. All I have now are things that I either actively dislike or I'm not in love with. But I'm of the ones I'm not in love with, I'm going to say the best, the one that I'm going to take, and feel free to just rip this pick because it's not a great pick. I get it. But I'm going to take the Manila folder, and it's boring and there's not a lot to it, but I have found it to be really kind of essential in what I've been doing. It's they work, they totally work, and I will say there is something very fun. Sometimes I go to a coffee shop to do some writing or whatever, and I'll bring two or three Manila folders with me from my files, and that feels cool. That's like a secret agent kind of thing that I kind of feel like, especially if I bring like my little satchel or case or whatever, and I pull those out, that feels like I'm doing something very important, which I'm not, but let me check the files that I brought with me. I like them. I'm not crazy about like the hanging folders. I guess I should like those more, but I don't. I like the Manila folder. I like the Manila folder. That's where I'm gonna go.
I wish I could go with you on this one, bud, but I can't. I have no use for the Manila folder. I like it has one thing going for it, pretty much, and the one thing that's going for it is that it's a staple of like old PI. Movies or, right. or James Bond. That's it, though. That's all it has. It holds in its very image. It holds the promise or the potential for something intriguing and mysterious. That's all it has. Otherwise, it's a pretty boring object. And I also think that there are a lot of other things that can do the same job. Like it doesn't. You know what I mean? Like there's other like you can just like you could just. Put a large clamp, a clip over a bunch of papers.
I don't like the clamps.
I don't either, but it does like the same clamps. Job. Like a paper clip at some level does the same job. Like I think, I'll tell you this, a better pick for you, in my opinion, would have been the kind of envelope, and you could have probably gotten away with this, that has the sort of like the two circles and the string where you make the sort of
I do like those. I
probably do, but if you had chosen it, I wouldn't have put up a huge fight because those are
cool, man.
Those are like that is like a, there's something important in that file. You gotta open that file quickly because there is something weird happening. Like that's the kind of file that like a guy says, you really want to get to the bottom of this? Look in here, and he throws it on the desk and then runs away. You know what? And then there's like the close up of that of the guy undoing the string. Like then. Yeah.
There's no way somebody would have done something, would have taken the time to wrap the string around that little circle, right. Unless there was something
There's something real weird going on.
I think that's yours, though. I mean, I would have considered doing that. I like I said, but I mean, that's an envelope. I mean, it really is an all envelope. Right. And I got to say, so let me just say very quickly. Lots and lots of things I don't like, and I was trying to avoid at all costs. Don't like the paperclip at all.
Stinks.
Completely horrid stinks. It totally stinks. And all clamps along those lines. I'll tell you what's a terrible, terrible device. The shredder.
Oh.
The shredder. Oh my gosh.
Listen, they're necessary, right? In the world we live in, you got to shred some stuff, and I get it. And there is something satisfying about watching a document be shredded. But they are loud and they jam all the time and they're like, threaten, like you feel like your finger's going to get torn into pieces when you use them. And like,
and deep down, no matter what you're shredding, it's like you're in Watergate. No matter what you do, you are totally trying to hide
like
something.
Enron, your Watergate, your like Countrywide Financial, you're up to no good. Even if you're a totally innocent person who's just like, I don't want my identity to be stolen. It still feels illicit what you're doing. It feels bad.
It does. Yeah. Not a fan of the shredder. What's going on with the paperweight? That's not a thing. Why? I mean, that's been around for what's that?
As like a decorative device, I have no problem with it. You know what I mean? It's like a
but that's a decoration. I'm talking about using it to keep paper on the table.
That's obviously nonsense. by the way, before we started this today, we made a joke with TJ, our producer, where we said, okay, all we're gonna do, we'll do a quick Browns update. And then, you said, I have one thing I'm going to spring on you, and then we'll do the draft. And the joke you made was, so, 90 minutes. The joke being, we are so long-winded.
Even we can't do this for 90 minutes.
Currently, we are at 1 hour, 26 minutes, and 35 seconds.
Yeah, we are totally going to do it. I mean, do we have anything for the end of the show? Do we even have anything?
I don't think we have anything for the end of the show. I think we pretty much.
I don't think we do. I think we can cut it off. You know what? People are still hammering me to try to get us to bring back one last meaningless thing. Somebody made this point of saying the whole show is one last meaningless thing now, and that they really wanted one last meaningless thing separated from all the other meaningless things on the show.
That's a weird argument.
If you're going to make an argument,
this is what I'm going to say. I'm going to say so, this. Maybe our friends in our new Reddit sub forum can do two things for us. Number one, they can open up a thread that will be people's suggestions for the player we adopt for in 2018 and the rationale behind why we should adopt them. And number two would be, people can weigh in on if they'd like us to have a specific final thing to replace one last meaningless thing, a little final amuse-bouche that comes at the end of the long, pointless meal. If anybody has suggestions for that, maybe they could post them there. Maybe that can be like the collection place for all suggestions related to those two subcategories.
I like it. I like it. Yeah. So if you have any suggestions at all, you can go to the Reddit the subreddit. By the way, didn't you do? You just did an AMA.
AMA. Yeah, for the first time ever, I did an Ask Me Anything. It was very fun. I enjoyed it a lot.
Did you enjoy it? Was there any uncomfortable moments in it at all?
No, there really weren't. Like people stayed on point. They didn't. They really asked a lot of questions about various shows I've worked on in The Good Place, and it was time to the return of The Good Place. We had been on hiatus because of Thursday Night Football for like 2 months, and we just came back last week. There's an episode that airs tonight, although by the time you hear this, it will be probably last night. There's four more left in the season.
After tonight or including tonight?
Including tonight.
By the time you hear this, there'll be three more toward the end of the season.
Three more episodes. I believe that's true. Isn't that true? 10 is airing tonight, 11, 12, 13. Yeah, so there's three more after this week's.
All right, and these are Thursday night on NBC,
Thursday night, 8:30 NBC. Yeah.
Please catch up on it. And I think I've got what our last thing should be, or to, at least for this episode, our last thing should be
a
30-second opportunity for you to just completely bash Keith Law. Because our friend Keith Law has been taunting you about Hot Fruit, as I have I on this show, but I think he's taken it to a different level.
You know, I'm not going to bash Keith. It feels cruel at this point because it just feels like I prefer to punch up is what I'm saying.
I understand.
I prefer to go after people who have rational arguments or who are on the right side of history. And since Keith is neither rational nor on the right side of history regarding his stance on Hot Fruit and Hot Fruit pies, it feels cruel and inhumane to continue to address this. So I'll let him scream into the void with his ridiculous opinions. And I'll just rise. I'll float above it like I always do. And he can say and do whatever he wants. It doesn't affect me.
Will we allow Keith Law to be guest on the podcast?
I don't know, but I maybe because it would be enjoyable to make the baseball card of him and give him a giant fake.
That's the only reason to do it is to make the card. Well, as always, Mike, thank you.
Thanks for having me.